This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
From the 37 verses of the Practice of a Bodhisattva, developing bodhicitta, verse number 10. From beginningless time, your mothers have cherished you. If they are now suffering, what then is the use of your own happiness? Therefore, in order to liberate limitless sentient beings, giving rise to bodhicitta is the practice of a bodhisattva. So the bodhisattva path and the bodhisattva is the path of unbounded compassion. The aspiration and vow to alleviate suffering for everyone and everything. And in the teachings of rebirth, consciousness is beginningless. It's not you, it's not the self, because the self is empty. And because in order for this moment of consciousness to appear, there has to be the previous moment of consciousness, it has no beginning. There's no point from a Buddhist perspective at which consciousness did not exist and then just suddenly, spontaneously appeared on its own. And so going back into a beginningless time, from the understanding of rebirth, there have been countless past lives in which the consciousness enters into different beings with each lifetime. And so that over the course of this endless series of lives, at this point, everyone that we encounter in the world at some point has been our mother. That's the teaching behind this. And we can think of that as, this is responding to the question of how do you raise selfless compassion for all beings? How do you do that? Having faith that that capacity is within us, how do we do that? And so, the mothers that have cherished you, these mothers represent those who you hold dear, those who have been generous to you, those who have taken care of you. Those beings among all the many that you have a particular, in a sense, relationship with, a particular kind of love for, or indebtedness to. And so however you may understand or relate to rebirth in terms of past lives, to appreciate that all beings, every living thing wants to be free of suffering, moves away from danger, from threat, from pain, and moves towards what within the world of that particular being they would regard as happiness, affirming of their life. And believing in that, seeing that, recognizing that, we then see all of the beings in the world, all of the people in the world who are struggling. Even though that's our basic impulse, our basic drive, is to avoid suffering, because of our delusion, because of the upside down and inside out ways we have of seeing things within the different afflicted mind and emotions, we very often create suffering for ourselves and others. And so to see and to witness all those who are struggling, and to recognize that to whatever degree we have our own happiness, and happiness here is really just represents all good things, all things that arise out of the enlightened mind, enlightened wisdom. And in all of their manifestations before enlightenment, all the things that bring goodness and affirmation into life. So that in recognizing those good things that we have in our own lives, we don't allow ourselves to become complacent within our own happiness, seeing and witnessing the struggle and the suffering of others. And at the same time, to not be ashamed or guilty that you have goodness in your life, that is a good thing. Right? That is something that you then bring to everyone. So on the one hand, to not be complacent, on the other hand, to not try and diminish or hide or think that there is something not quite right about that. It is quite right that we should be bringing forth our own happiness. And to then, from within the mind and the view of the Bodhisattva, to be using all of that, all of our benefits, our good qualities, our virtues, our accomplishments, for the sake of everyone. In other words, we put them to work. We use them. And so if we imagine every person as being on a path that is leading ultimately to enlightenment, a path that within the understanding of traditional Buddhism can take many, many lifetimes. But we can see that as taking place within this lifetime. That every person wants to, in some way, within their own way of seeing things, to move towards well-being. And yet, we see and witness people living in hell realms, hell beings, who are so immersed within that realm that it seems that every action they take to move towards well-being creates more of that hell realm. We see people who are hungry ghosts, who are so under the spell of that unquenchable desire, the desiring more makes sense. Have you ever experienced that? Can you relate to that? We see beings who live in godly realms, who are so intoxicated with power and seem to have more power than they can ever have, that they can ever use, and yet fight to keep it, and fight to keep it from others, and fight to keep others from having it. And that from within that realm, that makes sense. That seems self-evident. That's what anybody would do. And so to cultivate our understanding of these different realms in which beings live, ourselves too, and to have compassion, is not to be complacent to those states, not to be complacent to those beings, or just accept that that's a result of their karma, that's the way it is, but that we do actively try to change conditions, to shift habit patterns, to offer influence in whatever ways we can. Recognizing that these states don't appear on their own, they don't just happen for anyone, and that each being has Buddha nature. The nature of each being is complete and perfect and wise and also impermanent. Nothing about them is fixed. Nothing about any of us is fixed, which means, in a certain sense, things are always possible. Change is always not only possible, it's happening. And so those states of existence don't appear on their own. The Dalai Lama, in commenting on this, said it's clear that even among external concordant circumstances, external factors that are helpful to oneself come about in dependence upon many, many other sentient beings. Even people who are famous, who think that they are famous in their own right, can't be famous if other people don't think that they're famous. They can't be famous by themselves. Their fame is completely dependent upon others. He says food, clothing, a good name, having good conversation, all things that we experience arise in dependence on many other factors, many other sentient beings. Our livelihood depends on other beings. Our comfort depends on other beings. Our happiness, our being here. The life of the monastics, we are completely dependent on you, on others, on the Sangha, on the world. And so he says, one practices virtue only within the context of selflessness with regards to other people. We can only cultivate bodhicitta. We can only bring forth practice, well-being, the relief of suffering, and that boundless compassion with other people. We can't do it by ourselves. And so this path is to help us work with those people, just to keep it in the realm of humans, that we love and care for and have attachments towards because of that love. Those people that we fear or dislike or hate and have attachments against, and those that we are indifferent to. We don't care about them. We're apathetic. They are kind of invisible to us. Dalai Lama says, compassion without other beings cannot develop. This is the most important thing. This special compassion, this is the compassion that arises out of the bodhisattva path, out of the practice of selflessness, only develops because of other sentient beings. Therefore, without them, we cannot practice and develop it. Therefore, Buddhahood, enlightenment, depends essentially on others. This is the point of view from which we develop this very important mindfulness, awareness, intimate understanding of the basic goodness of other beings. And so if we think about people that we deem from within the aspiration for this boundless compassion, if we think about those people that we think are unworthy of compassion, they don't deserve it. Right? Because of who they are, because of how they act, because of what they do, because of how they, their impact on other people. In our heart, we feel like they don't deserve it. They're not worthy of that. So then we might ask, well, if you are thinking about that with regards to somebody, are you yourself worthy of compassion? Are you deserving? Because the anger that we feel, the hatred that we feel, in so many cases, that other person doesn't even know about, right? They don't know that we have those feelings toward them. Even if they did, they might not care. But meanwhile, we are living in a state of anger or resentment or bitterness or hatred, which is our suffering. So are we ourselves worthy of relieving that suffering? In order to do that, we have to do that with that other person. The person that we dislike is the person that can help us to free ourselves. And in doing that, we bring forth our belief that we do deserve to be happy. And then we have to encounter the belief that the other person also deserves to be happy. And so to give that life, to give that teeth, we cultivate this aspiration. And so in Buddhism, bodhicitta is spoken about in terms of ultimate bodhicitta, which is based in emptiness. the realization that all beings have Buddha nature, that all beings are fundamentally unhindered. And then there's everyday bodhicitta, conventional bodhicitta, which is where we practice, how we cultivate, how we strengthen it, how we express it. And bodhicitta itself has two aspects. One is the desire to serve, to be of service, to be of benefit, to really tangibly and in any way possible help others. And also, the other aspect is directed towards our own realization of enlightenment, because they're interdependent, they're intertwined, because that desire to liberate other beings is based in not just our enlightenment, our realization of selflessness, but the realization that others are also have enlightened nature. And so Khyentse Rinpoche said, just as all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the past aroused bodhicitta in their own practice, making the wish to bring all beings to enlightenment and then live their life in that, so now we in our turn should generate this great compassion and bring forth bodhicitta. Now it's our turn. Right? Those before us did it, and we are the recipients of that. And so now it's our time to do that and continue that tradition of dignity and sanity. And so in order to cultivate that, because this is in a sense asking some of them, us to dig deep and draw forth some of the most difficult things in human nature. You know, it's so easy to provoke resentment, anger, hatred. Right? We see that everywhere. It's so easy to do that. Right? When we are susceptible to that, when we are vulnerable to that. And we do, clearly we do, within our attachments and our delusions and our views, we do have a strong propensity, right, towards attachments and false views, towards the actions that come out of those, towards doing things that are not really that skillful, not very helpful, that can be very self-centered. And so how do we transform that? Right? We see that we can't just do it willfully. We can't just decide, okay, I'm not going to be like that anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore. So how do we actually do it from deep within? How do we begin to move those waters? And so there are reflections. And so to reflect within your meditation, within mindfulness, about the good qualities of others. You know, have you ever had the experience of somebody who really got under your skin, right? Who really annoyed you and you really didn't like them or were upset with them and were really sort of focusing on their negative qualities, and then you watch them do something very loving, very kind, very generous. I remember when I was waiting tables years ago in the city, how often I would be delighted and surprised and humbled with a table, a party of, you know, people eating that I was serving, where I had decided that they were of a particular ilk. They were not going to be good to me. They were not going to leave me a good tip. They were going to be demanding. They were not going to be nice. And sometimes that just was true. But there were delightful moments where, in my conviction and confidence, something would happen. They would do something, or somebody would do something, which would completely turn me on my head and show me that I was wrong. Show me that there was something, perhaps I was seeing something, but there was something else to be seen. Where they would offer some kindness, some kind word, some kind gesture. And so to look for, to have faith that every person has goodness within them, has good qualities. Sometimes they're hard to find. but that even with our imagination, that they, with people that they love, with their animals in their life, if they have animals, that in some moments, in some gestures, there's kindness that comes through. Or just thinking about the fact that they, you know, when they're tired, they lay down in a bed and it feels good. When they're hungry and they eat, that's a satisfying experience. We know those simple moments. That they have a mother, that they have people in their life who love them. In other words, we find a way in our mind, so that we're not blinded. We don't blind ourselves by certain qualities or characteristics that may be there, that are true, but are not the whole truth. And then to have empathy for the circumstances that we may know about, or we may just be able to reasonably be sure we're present in this person's life that has led them and is leading them to act in the way that they do. To be unkind, to be selfish, to be greedy, to be insensitive, to be hateful, to be violent. Knowing that all things are a result of karma, past actions, that all things arise as the fruits of seeds planted in the past. And so reflecting on those seeds, known or just imagined, and having empathy, sympathy, and extending that, recognizing that whatever we see on the outside, that there must be, in a sense, the larger the actions, the negative actions, the greater the internal pain, the loneliness, the isolation, the desperation. And understanding how adept we can be at masking that, because we ourselves do that too. And so not being seduced by just the mask. And then taking it further and wanting now, having sort of met that within our mind with regards to that person or the people, we begin to cultivate a desire within ourselves to want to help, to encourage, and strengthen the kindness, the goodness that exists within them, rather than being happy when we see their negative qualities again, because it reconfirms what we already believe. And in a way, that makes us feel good, because we can keep them in that box, wanting them to have happiness. The more happy they were, the less they would be acting out in ways that are hurtful. Wanting to be free of suffering and pain and of the causes and conditions that are bringing that about. And then to move towards thinking about what could I do to help? And of course, this has a lot to do with the person in your mind. Who are they? Where are they in relationship to you in your life? Are they somebody in your life physically? Presently? Are they somebody in the past? Are they somebody you'll never meet? Because the mind is not fixed, because the mind is vast and boundless, and because mind is the most powerful thing in this human world, we can do all of this, whoever that person is. And then in resolving to do something to help, then we raise bodhicitta and bring it into an expressed intention. And in doing this, we recognize that we are going to have to do all of these things with ourselves too. Right? Then in whatever ways those same binding or unskillful or negative qualities arise within ourselves, we're going to have to bring forth the same kind of compassion, recognizing those good qualities that exist within ourselves, examining the seeds that have brought those to fruition, allowing ourselves to be intimate with the pain of that. That is important. We don't like it, Right? We don't like to feel the pain within us when we experience something that we don't like about ourselves. But that pain is really important. It makes it real, and it also motivates us. And it also helps us to develop our compassion and our empathy. And so then, now, what can I do? And in all of this, if you think, reflect on this, in all of this meditation, you're in relationship with that very person in your mind. You are relating to them in your mind. And in a sense, on your own terms, like you are guiding this in your own mind, which is very powerful. At the same time that you're aware of why you need to do this, who they are, how they're being in the world, why you need to address this towards them and within yourself. And all of that is empowering us to be in a, to move towards a right relationship with that person. And so to help us to face this unkindness, this selfishness, all of these binding qualities that tend to push us away or repel us within ourselves and others, there's the practice of atonement. There's the practice of forgiveness. We turn towards the Buddhas and ancestors. We chanted the names of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas this evening, invoking them, bringing them into this space, bringing them into our minds, and not just these beings, but their qualities, which is to bring forth those qualities within ourselves. We have the precepts, which is the path of the bodhisattva. They are bodhisattva precepts. And so when raised in bodhicitta, these precepts are a significant, essential part of the path by which we cultivate and give teeth, if you will, to these reflections. First and foremost, in our own actions. So in our wanting to liberate the suffering of all beings, we have to be liberating ourselves. And so the precepts are what guides us in this, and in doing that, we're also meeting the ground and the sort of the inner workings of those ways in which we create the most suffering. Taking life, taking what doesn't belong to us, misusing the body and sexuality, not being truthful, turning away from the natural clarity of mind, speaking of others' errors and faults, elevating the self and blaming others, being ungenerous with what we have to offer, being angry righteously, and desecrating what is sacred. Bodhicitta is, you know, Prajnaparamita is the mother of all Buddhas. And I was thinking, bodhicitta is the mother of all vows. Because in bodhicitta, in the vow that we bring forth as bodhicitta arises, every vow we will ever make in our life is included in that. Because bodhicitta includes everyone. And it includes everything that is helpful and beneficial. And so whatever good vows we make, whether it be marriage vows, whether it be bodhisattva precept vows, whether they be ordination vows, whether they just be internal, personal vows that you make towards yourself, for yourself, all of those are present within bodhicitta. And in that way, raising bodhicitta, that great aspiration, brings us into all of those other vows and gives us urgency. So having reflected and cultivated and raise this aspiration and then making commitments, which is what a vow is, then we have to find our way. Now we have to fulfill it. It must be fulfilled, which means we have to live it. And of course, we can speak of this sequentially, but it's really happening all together. It's all of one piece. And as it develops, it is transforming. And so we don't immediately begin making vows. We're not ready to do that. It's not time yet. Taking vows needs to be prepared. We need to prepare ourselves. We don't immediately raise bodhicitta. That doesn't happen. Right? It's a result of being on the path. It's a result of doing what the teachings are teaching and pointing to. And then what happens is that what seemed impossible or what seemed inconceivable or what seemed outside of your capacity or just not even what you're looking for may very well go through the transformation in which now it is closer. Now it is something that you're reflecting on in a much more personal way. Now those teachings, those words are speaking directly to you. They're not coming from far away. And so Shantideva said, "With joy I celebrate the virtue that relieves every being from the sorrows of the states of loss and places those who languish in suffering into a realm of bliss. And I rejoice in the virtue that creates the cause, those conditions of gaining the enlightened state. The intention, bodhicitta, that ocean of great good that seeks to place every being in the state of bliss, and every action that arises out of that, which is generated for the benefit of others, that is my delight. That brings me joy. That is my happiness." And Shantideva says, "And so within the sight of all the Buddhas, being witnessed by all the wise ones and sages, by you, I call every being to come to liberation. And until that state is reached, may every being have some measure of joy, some measure of peace." And so to appreciate the path of bodhicitta, it is large, it is demanding. And it is the path of happiness and joy.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.